Seattle, saw some friends, and went down close to San Francisco, saw some other friends, and I started getting sick. I thought it was the flu. I thought I was giving the flu to my friends, and it was pretty miserable. We stopped in Oregon to see a doctor, to see what was going on, and see if it was strep or whatever. And then by the time I got home, I was so weak that just taking a shower winded me. I was just out of breath. I just sat on the couch, and that's all I could do. And so I went to the doctor at home, and they looked in my mouth, and they saw a thrush that only babies and people with AIDS get. And they said, "Oh, I think you have AIDS." And they sent my wife out of the room. Said, "We got to ask you questions, see what you've been doing in your private life." And I was thinking, you know, man, I don't know how I got AIDS, but if I did, that's going to be embarrassing. But they kept looking at my blood results, and of course the AIDS test was negative, and the doctor sent my blood work to a hematologist, and he said, "Well, it looks like he has leukemia, but you have to have a bone marrow biopsy to make sure." And a bone marrow biopsy is probably about what you're imagining. They drill into your bone and take bone marrow out, and they don't put you to sleep for that. And I've had 8 of them, and so the day I went in for that biopsy, we were nailing down the life insurance. We got it all complete. And I didn't tell my friend that was my insurance guy what we were doing, because I wanted to make sure we got that squared away before I got diagnosed. And so then the next day, the doctor said, "I have a bed reserved for you at the hospital. Do you want to come start treatment, or do you want to set an appointment and talk about it?" And I felt strongly that God said that there's no need to talk about it. So I went right to the hospital. And at the time, I didn't know what leukemia was. I'd want to tell people what I had, and I'd think, is it emphysema? Is it tuberculosis? Oh, no, it's leukemia. And so I want to tell you, for those of you that don't know, that your bone marrow makes your blood, and leukemia is a blood cancer where your bone marrow starts making useless blood, and it, as time goes on, it makes more and more useless blood, and it doesn't give that blood doesn't give you any of the benefit, vital benefits that you need. And also the useless blood starts to clog up to where the good blood that you do have can't do its job, and so that you die from not getting your the benefits from your vital blood. And they have there's different kinds of leukemia. Some of them it can go for 20 years with no treatment, very little side effects. And but I got acute myeloblastic leukemia, and with a FLT3 mutation, took me forever to learn that, but it kills you in weeks or months if you don't get treatment. And, you know, like I said, I was so healthy in September, and in November I was dying with leukemia. And one miracle that God performed in this was that mutation that I had a few years before I got it was a death sentence. But they had developed a medicine for that. It cost $25,000 for a month of it. But God supplied a way for it to take care of me. And I spent a month in the hospital doing chemo, and the doctors figured out that I needed a transplant, a bone marrow transplant. And in December of 2018, I spent the whole month with Christmas, our anniversary, New Year's, Hannah's birthday, and when it was finished, when I went in, my blood was 80% leukemia, and when I got done with that month of treatment, it was 50% leukemia. A lot of people said, "Oh, that's great," but they had to have close to zero, so it was pretty much worthless all the time I spent in there. And they don't do bone marrow transplants at that hospital, so they said I need to go to this other one. And so we went to the other one. It's called UCSD, and I did the chemotherapy for another month. I spent the whole month of February on the sixth floor at UCSD. They wouldn't even let me leave the floor at all. One time there was a guy coming up the elevator with Marlene that he had been outside for a smoke break. And when she told me about that, I went to my nurse and said, "I want a smoke break." And she says, "You don't smoke." And I was like, "I don't care. I want a smoke break." But it didn't fly. I didn't get a smoke break. So while we were in UCSD, and I say we because she was with me the whole time, every night she spent in the hospital. But the UCSD was fighting with my insurance company, and UCSD wanted my insurance company to commit to pay for the bone marrow transplant. And I've been told that it costs $1 million for a bone marrow transplant. And it went on for weeks. And during that time, they tested Bill to see if he was a match, and my older brother, if he was a match. Bill was close, but not close enough. And my insurance company finally agreed to pay for it. And then UCSD found out that my insurance company doesn't pay for medicine. And when we bought the insurance, I was like, "Oh, whatever, we'll pay for our own medicine." I had no idea what medicine cost. Well, then they said, "Well, I'm sorry, you can't have a transplant because you can't afford the medicine after it." And that was probably my darkest time for this whole thing. It was really hard. I was pretty much at peace with dying because the chances of me dying were pretty big. But when they said, "We have a cure, but you can't have it," that was hard. And so I went home to die. And I was sitting on the couch, and she went to do something, and God told me to try some more. And we had tried to get into Medi-Cal, which is the state insurance, but they rejected us because they would only look at the income when I was working. And I wasn't working, I couldn't work. And so I started calling, and I had the biggest runaround of my life, person to department to person to person to person. And finally, I got a hold of Iris Gonzalez, and God put her in our lives. She helped me, she helped us fill out the forms the way the government wanted to see it, and she would go on three-way calls with me because I didn't know what to say, but she knew what to say with Medi-Cal, and we would fill out the forms, give them all this information. We'd take them to her, and she and some of her coworkers would pray over it and then submit it. And they accepted it. They said, okay, we'll take care of you. But you have to have a $3,500 a month copay. And I said, well, I don't know how I'm going to do that, but, God got us this far. I think, if he wants us to, he'll keep us going. And then the other crazy thing was that they said, but you can't have more than $3,000 in your bank account. Okay. But, so we paid the first month, and then the next month they went to pay, and they said, oh, you don't have to pay. And we haven't had to pay since. And all the medicine, that $25,000 a month medicine, $6,000 a month this, $1,000 a month that, we haven't had to pay for it. And and while this was going on, after that February, then I would go home for 3 weeks, and then I would go back for a week for what they call consolidation chemo, and I call it maintenance chemo, so that the leukemia didn't come back, because leukemia, if you don't get a transplant, it comes back usually. Some people even have to have more than one transplant. So, right before the transplant, they said, okay, when you have a transplant, you cannot leave your house. You can't go to a church. You can't go to restaurants or stores or anywhere for 9 months. And you have to have a babysitter for 3 months. Somebody has to be with you for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And after the 9 months was over, then it was COVID. I was so wanting to be free. And then everybody was locked down, and all the restaurants were closed, and my one daughter got me a t-shirt that says, I was social distancing before it was cool. So I did get my transplant on July 5th, 2019, and my donor is a lady in Germany, and I don't get to know who she is until 2 years after the transplant. I'm anxiously awaiting to meeting her by video phone, but we sent her a couple of cards, and she sent us a couple of cards, but they have to check and make sure you don't write anything revealing in there, and So she wants to meet us. And but what's interesting is that her blood type is O positive. And now my blood type is O positive because her bone marrow is making my blood. I was A positive. But even more interesting than that is now my blood is female DNA. It's really strange. And so if a forensic lab had some of my blood and they were looking for me, they would be looking for a woman. So it's just weird. And then, of course, there was all the jokes about, especially when I was on steroids and all emotional about what time of month it was and all that. But the transplant itself was pretty anticlimactic. They hung her two bags of stem cells on my IV pole. It looked like a blood transfusion. They pumped them into my veins, and I was looking at those bags and thinking, oh, $1 million, okay. But I felt the same after. But then shortly after that, I started getting GVHD, and that's graft versus host disease. And that's where some of her white blood cells didn't recognize my body, and so they started attacking my eyes and my mouth and my lungs and liver and kidneys and skin and just so many things. And so when people told me that the bone marrow transplant was going to be so hard, I didn't really believe them, because I had an easier time with all that chemo than what I had heard people have. But I got to tell you that the bone marrow transplant is very hard. And they did say, though, that it's a good thing that my that I was getting GVHD, because that means that the white blood cells were fighting and working, and that they would keep the leukemia from coming back. So, you know, it has its positives. And because of the GVHD, they give you an immune suppressant drug, and that, of course, suppresses your immune system. And so I ended up getting this deadly fungus in my sinuses. And they said it was so deadly that they told me about this girl that she got it in her finger and they had to cut her finger off. And it was in my sinuses, and they had to go up in my nose 3 times and surgically cut, and they cut a bone out. I don't know what bone it is. I don't miss it. I still have the one on the left, I guess, but I don't know. And but they said that if it was so close to my brain, like within a membrane away, and if it crossed over, that I was dead. And they said that if the surgeon was cutting and slipped and cut into my brain, that I was dead. And so at one point, there was this doctor that was trying to stress to me how close to death I was. And he was going on and on and on. And he wasn't getting the reaction he was looking for, but I think he thought I didn't believe him or I wasn't understanding, I don't know what. But finally I said, stop, enough, I'm not scared. And I know where I'm going when I die, leave me alone. And I did try to have fun where I could. there was a nurse named Martha that she was pretty stern. She wasn't like Nurse Ratched. You could tell she really cared. But she, some of the nurses told me that they were scared of her when they first started working for her. And they have on your room this whiteboard, and they have on there, you know, your nurse and your doctor and your date and why you're there, and they have this little spot that says goal of the day, and they say, okay, what do you want to put on there? Do you want to say you're going to go for a walk or take a shower? What do you want to put? I said, I want to put on there that I want to give Martha a hard time today. And a bunch of other nurses were coming in taking pictures of it, and they're like, yeah, you get Martha. One time I went to her and I said, do you have the phone number for the patient abuse hotline? And she said, I thought she wouldn't know what to say. And she says, yes, it's 1-800-I-DON'T-CARE. And then she put her hand in front of her mouth and she says, oh, I'm sorry, did I say that out loud? I'm going to get fired. But we had a good time with her. But one time, Elizabeth sent us this little battery-powered goldfish. And we had an empty IV bag, and we cut the top and put the fish in there and filled it back with water and taped it and hung it on the IV pole and went walking around the hospital. And this little fish was swimming in the IV bag. And we got all kinds of reactions. It was weird to me that the most common comment I got was like, how is that sanitary? And I'm like, it's not connected to me, come on. So I got very weak. I got so weak that I couldn't change clothes by myself. She had to help me. It was hard to climb into bed and hard to turn over. I had to like try to land in bed the way I wanted to be because it was just so hard. And I got to where I just wear the same clothes to bed and during the day. And I say that I was knocking on death's door a few times. I even opened the door and looked inside, but it wasn't for me. So, and then there were times when I said, God, I'm going to quit. It's not worth it. There's too much pain. It's never ending. I mean, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm going to quit. And then he would say to me gently, what about your wife and your family and your church that loves you and the things that I have for you to do? I'm like, okay, God, but I'm going to quit. It's just too hard. I can't do it. But what about your wife and your family and your church and the things I have for you to do? Okay. But I'm going to quit. And it just went round and round and round and round. Finally, I figured out that I couldn't quit. It just wasn't an option. And I had some other things. I had like 6 kidney stones. And I had this CMV virus that most people have in their bodies, but they don't know it because their immune system keeps it in check. But I got it, and I got a BK virus that I don't want to describe. It's kind of gross, but it was really, really miserable. And we both got COVID in December, and you know, it seems like I would go over a hurdle and I would think that, okay, now it's all going to be uphill from now, and it'd be going along, and then there's another one and another one and another one. It seems like I started to learn that that's what God had for me, is to go through these things. And I am still dealing with GVHD. I can't see very good because it's mainly affecting my eyes. But I go for this treatment called photopheresis, where they take out 10% of your blood and they separate out the white blood cells and they treat them with this medicine. And the that deactivates the rogue white blood cells, and they also marks them, and then when they put it back in, the other blood cells learn to go after that kind of blood cell. And like I say, I sit in a chair for 3 hours and there's a nurse that has to take care of me, and she can't, she or he can't go anywhere else. And I talk to them and I talk to them, and they say, do you want to watch TV? I'm like, no. They can't leave. I have to, but I talk to them, and I enjoy that, even though, you have to sit there so long. And I wanted to thank you so much for all your prayers and support. We've had people praying for us all over the world, and I know that you people here have prayed a lot for me. And I can't thank my wife enough for being there with me the whole time. Like I said, every night for 3 months, and every day I would tell her she had to leave to not burn out, to do something else. And I believe that she had it far worse than me. And she told me just a few weeks ago that at one point I told her that I hated her. I don't remember that. And it made me feel so sad that she told me that. And then she felt sad that she told me that. But I said, no, it makes me have a little understanding of how much that you love me to go through me being mean to, I was mean to my kids too. Sometimes I would get up in the morning and I would say, I'm sorry for what I'm going to say or do today, because I don't know what it is, but I was not me. And I don't deserve my wife. But I often say to people that I don't recommend leukemia to anyone, but that I have had very many positive things from leukemia that I couldn't have gotten any other way. One thing is the miraculous way that God provided for us financially. I haven't worked in more than 2 years. It's just, I don't know, it's just miraculous. There's nothing else to say. And there was the miracle of how God changed the insurance. I got to see that. There was just so many miracles. And I asked my doctor one time, I said, was there any time you thought I was going to die? And she said, yeah, it was two times, when you got the fungus and when they said you couldn't have a transplant. And so, you know, it's just amazing seeing those miracles. And then all of the people that came to visit me, on Christmas Day, when I was in there, so many people came that they set a limit for how many people could come, because they said, this is too many people. And I got to know people. I've known them for like almost 30 years, and I didn't know them the way I do now, because the time they spent with me. And then a huge one was relationships that I was really struggling with. My relationship with my mom was not good, and I called her every day for a year during this. And I don't call her every day now, but I still call her a few times a week. And then the biggest one was Esther. I had a horrible relationship with Esther, and God used this to heal that. And I'm so thankful for that. And I had so much time to read my Bible and pray. I usually would, I'd be laying in bed and I'd look at the clock and it'd be like 2 in the morning. Like, oh, I can't get up yet. And I'd look again later and, oh, it's 3. Like, I'm going to try to stay in bed till 4. But usually I would get up at 4 and I'd go out in the hall and it'd be like, what's wrong? And I'd be, oh, it's nothing. I'm just getting up. And I would go to the common room and read my Bible and pray and call my mom and watch the sun come up. And this one nurse started calling me pastor. So, and then, and sometimes they would come and draw my blood and do my vitals in that common room and leave her sleeping, which I was very thankful for. But then, and one of the huge things is that God changed something inside of me. I am a crazy, crazy shy person. And now I love to talk to strangers. When I'm waiting in a doctor's office or in the elevator or pretty much anywhere, I want to talk to them. And if they have cancer, I really want to talk to them. And it makes it so much easier to witness and pass out tracts. And it's just a joy. I never had that before. And another thing is that Marlene says that I'm a better person, and that makes me very happy. And I wrote this thing. It says, you can't go through something like this without it changing you, and you can't change yourself the way something like this does. And early on, when I first went in the hospital, I prayed to God, and I said, God, this is going to change me. Please help me to be a better man when I come out of this. And I knew that it was my choice. I know that a lot of people get bitter and it changes them the wrong way. But I was begging God to use it to help me. And early on, he gave me this verse, Proverbs 15:15. All the days of the afflicted are evil, but he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. And he's given me a continual feast for this 2+ years of this life-changing event. So a lot of that message this morning was really resonating with me, with all that I've been through, you know, living faith and seeing God work, and that's pretty much mine. And I'll let Marlene say her piece. Oh, you want that? Sure.
I work sound at our church, and I'm the one putting microphones on people. I don't wear them. So, okay, so as a young girl, you dream a lot. You ladies will understand this. You dream about who you want to marry. And I read a lot of books, and the books taught me that the most desirable was tall, strong, dark hair, popular, romantic men. But life gives us a false impression of what the perfect husband will be. I decided at a young age that those weren't the qualities I wanted. But then I had my own false impressions. I wanted somebody who was strong mentally, physically, and spiritually. I grew up in a poor family and without a lot of security. I also learned not to trust anyone. I wanted love and security so badly. I married someone who I thought would be the perfect husband. Before we were married, Bob bought us a house to live in. He got me a brand new car. Now I had to wait 6 months to learn to drive the car, but that was okay. He was providing for me. He had a successful business. We really didn't have a want for very much. Life went along. Everything was great. We had our ups and downs, as marriages will. I had somebody who was hardworking, who actually loved me for who I was, not for what I could do. He was my spiritual leader. There wasn't anything my wonderful husband couldn't do. Maybe we had to work extra hard for something that we wanted sometimes, but that's okay. Hard work didn't hurt anybody. Then came leukemia, and it brought our world to a screeching halt. Now, I had been praying for some time that God would give us a job that wasn't so physically demanding on the body. I was wearing out, and I couldn't keep up with him anymore. Now suddenly there's no job, there's no security, there's no spiritual advisor, and at times half of what he said and did didn't make any sense to anybody but him. It was very strange. Suddenly I had to be everything. I had to bring in money by myself. I had to make the decisions. I felt like the weight of the whole world was on me, and I wasn't prepared for this. God doesn't tell you ahead of time that for the next 2 years or more, because it's been 2 years and more, that your whole world is changing. At the hospital, I was sat thinking, okay, where am I going to get the money to pay the bills? My husband needs expensive medicine. Where am I going to get this money? He can't get the money. So this is all going to fall on me. And let's see here. God had a solution for it. He had me read the book of Job. And you're thinking, well, Job? Why Job? But there was a lot that God wanted me to learn from Job. One of the things that I saw in there is I didn't see a timeline in Job. All the times I've read Job, I never saw a timeline. Now, I'm sure some commentators speculate how long the book of Job covered, but I didn't see in the Bible anywhere where it said how long this kept going on for Job. And God didn't tell me how long this was going to keep going for me. Let's see here. He doesn't tell us how long the trials will last. He only promises that he'll get us through the trial if we let him. When the doctor told us that Bob had the deadly infection, he also said that there was a huge chance that Bob would not live through the surgery. That was hard to know that I was putting my husband, I was agreeing, because he could no longer agree to it. He was just totally incoherent. And so I had to agree to put him through the surgery where the probability is that he won't make it through it. After he came out of the surgery, he spent 3 days in the ICU. His heart rate and blood pressure were erratic. He couldn't keep his oxygen levels up. After about 3 days, they took us back to the sixth floor, and we were back in a room on the sixth floor. And then they told me, "I'm sorry, we have to do the surgery again. And there's no guarantee he'll come out of it alive." And so again, I had to sign saying, "Yes, you can do the surgery on my husband." The hospital provided a, it's called a meditation room. They don't have chapels anymore. It's a meditation room. So when Bob was sleeping, I would go in this meditation room, and I would spend hours in there crying and praying and asking God for guidance. It was someplace where I felt I could pour out my heart to him without being a discouragement to Bob or be a discouragement to the girls. That night that I signed him to go to the second surgery, God told me that he knew my life wasn't easy. It had never been easy. And he said that there was a reason my life wasn't easy, because he needed the strength and determination that was built because of that hard life. He told me that he was the one who made me strong, not the hard life. He was asking me, what he was asking of me, he couldn't ask of someone who had not been through what I had been through. At that time, he told me that the hard times weren't over. There was more to come. And he asked me if I was okay with it. That night when I left that meditation room, God gave me such peace. Not peace that my husband was going to make it through the surgery, but peace that he was in control. And he would take care of me no matter what. After about the third or fourth time of reading Job, I asked God again, "What do you want me to read next?" Because in the hospital, you have a lot of time to read. And he told me again, Job. And I'm like, "God, can I read Psalms? There's a lot of encouraging verses in Psalms." And he said, "Yeah, you can read Psalms, but I'm going to be in Job. Take your pick." So needless to say, disappointed, I went back to Job once again. And this time, God was teaching me that I needed to trust him more. But not just him, but those around me that he had put in my life to be there for me. But I had to reach out to them. They needed to know that I needed them. Trust isn't something that has ever come easy to me, so it was very, very difficult for me to reach out. But he also warned me that I didn't need friends like Job had when Job was going through his trial. I needed friends that were going to be there to support me and be there to encourage me. Bob and I don't have family in San Diego. Our families are too far away. When those quick emergencies arise, when suddenly his sentences become just a bunch of letters that get put together, and you're like, how did you even form all those letters in your mouth? Because they don't go together. And it's like, okay, back to the ER we go. When those little emergencies arise, our families are too far away. They can't help us. They can't be there for us. I didn't grow up with a lot of people doing things for me. I had to work hard. I had to fight what I needed. But this time, he wanted me to reach out and find the people that he had placed in my path. At the same time God was allowing us to go through this battle with leukemia, he also had me fighting the battle of MS. MS is not a fun disease to have. He's allowed me to go through physical trials that are limiting what I can physically do. I've had to give up ministries because I physically cannot do them anymore. But God has also been teaching me that through all of this, that I need to trust in what God could do, not through what I could do. It wasn't about what I could do. It's what God could do through me. one of the things that I was looking at is I couldn't keep doing, at that point I was still doing monthly maintenance. And it's, you go through ponds, you pick out all the dead plants and dead fish, and I put them in 5-gallon buckets that are full. And then I take them to the either their trash can or their dumpster. Well, trash cans come here to me. So I'm lifting 5-gallon buckets all day long into these trash cans. Dumpsters come here to me. So I'm lifting 5-gallon buckets up, and it's very hard on your body, especially when you have MS. And I knew I couldn't keep doing it. And so I was praying, and I was searching different jobs. And Bob was like, well, I thought you were going to study for your real estate license. I'm like, well, I was, but we were going to do that together. And he goes, well, why can't we do it together now? I'm like, yeah, we can, but you can't right now. And he goes, but you can right now. So I started studying for my real estate license. Now, I am not a great student. I don't memorize quickly. Formulas, don't give me a formula, because I'll memorize the formula and I have no clue what problem it goes to. I just know a formula. So I go to take this state exam, and I went into it knowing that they designed this for 75% of the people taking it to fail. And so I was like, okay, God, maybe I can squeak by. And squeak by is all that I did. I went in there, and I knew I had to answer 105 questions. I had to get 105 correct. So I went through, I did what they told me, and I answered all the ones I knew. I was to 85. I'm like, oh, dear Lord, you've got to help me. And so then I go through, I was like, okay, God, I have no clue what they're asking me at this question, but can this one be the right answer? And then can this one be the right answer? And then I got to the end, and there was a finish button. And I'm like, oh, no, I better go back over it. 3 times I went back over this test and praying, God, can this be the right answer? And I finally got to the end for the 3rd time, and God told me, it's not what you can do. It's what I can do through you. Push the finish button, because it's all a computerized test. So I went ahead and I pushed the finish button, and I gathered my belongings, and I marched back out of the room. And these testing sites are these secure rooms, and they're like, okay, go to the restroom, go get your things out of the locker, here's your results, walk outside, and there's a guard who escorts you out. I don't know what they thought I was going to do, but I was trying to flee that place. And I got out there and I opened the paper, and it said I passed. I sat in the car and I cried for about 30 minutes because it was so stressful. I was sure I was going to fail this test because I had no clue what these were. But God again showed me that it wasn't what I could do. It's what He could do. And then I thought, okay, how hard can it be to sell a house? There's people, they know they want to buy a house. They come to you to buy a house. How hard can it be? I sold ponds to people who had no clue what a pond was. They didn't know they wanted it. If I could sell that to them, yeah, I could sell a house. And so I got my business cards and my open house signs, and COVID hit. The state took away the abilities to do open houses. Open houses is how they teach new realtors the ropes. You hold open houses, you get your clients. That's how you get started. And I had no open houses. I had one with a lady, and then my next one, nobody came because it was COVID. Everybody was scared to go out. So the conversation with God was, again, very interesting. How in the world could He put me in an industry? And how did He expect me to get clients if He allows the state to cripple me? Everyone says, hold open houses. I can't do that. I kind of felt like the Israelites when the Egyptians took all their straw away and told them they still had to make bricks. I'm like, God, I got to make money. How do I make money if I can't do the steps? But God again has shown me that it's not what I can do, it's what He can do. And He has been bringing the clients by. not quite as fast as I would like, but he's been bringing the clients by. So yeah, the battle with leukemia is hard. The battle with GVHD is hard. The battle with MS is hard. But it isn't about us. It's about what God can do through us. The churches have been such a blessing and encouragement to us, whether it's money or food or materials. One guy came several times and fixed our plumbing. Some other guys came and showed me how to fix the leaky roof. I mean, it's just anything and everything, which he can't do any of it. It all falls to me to do. But it's little things that people have done for us. There was one elderly lady in our church, and I didn't know until much later, but they set up food trains for us when he was in the hospital. And she wanted to help, but she didn't feel that she could provide a whole meal for us. And so she gave some money to her Sunday school teacher and said, can this help do a meal for them? Well, he was able to take that money, and he bought me little packages of ranch dressing. Now, the hospital has salads. And they have ranch dressing, I suppose. They call it ranch, but it's the weirdest tasting ranch I've ever tasted. And I didn't really much care for it. But her little gift was such a blessing to me because I had something that I liked to go on my salad. People like you have taught us the meaning of extended families. There's a lot of stories that we could share with you on this journey that God has given us. But we really want to thank you for being there with us, being the strength and encouragement we needed to get through the tough parts and the laughter over the silly parts. And thank you so much for your love and concern.